Hello, everyone. Welcome to Route 616, where we read the shit so you don't have to. Actually, that's a little unfair. We're not all doing Daredevil this week.
Yes, some of us are doing Spider-Man.
Of course.
Also, some of us don't read these.
Well, to be fair, I'm not entirely sure he can read.
Oh.
I mean, he is a Liverpool fan.
Oh my god, that's so cold. The fuck did I do to deserve that?
Root for Liverpool. And, you know, be you.
Oh, well, yeah, okay. I can't stop being me. You know, Super Dan. But but it's nothing. There's no shame in voting for Liverpool.
It's frozen in the finger. I hope that's frozen for the podcast, too.
Oh, I hope we don't lose them.
Anyway, well, I've got a moment of peace and quiet. I've taken over the hosting of this podcast for this episode because some people can't be counted on to manage a target, let alone a podcast of absolutely no viewers.
Yeah.
And joining me is the recently unfrozen Dan, also known as George Hackenschmidt's number one fan, because he was the first person to watch George Hackenschmidt wrestle. And Ryan,
I have no idea who
the Booty Man's number one fan, because he made an embarrassing admission on chat the other night.
Oh,
we're off to a great start. By the way, this is episode 36 of this illustrious podcast.
You tell him, Booty Boy.
Oh no! Oh my! So I guess
come on.
We'll remind
everybody. Get that booty going here, buddy. Come on.
Since it's been a couple weeks now, and thank God we got Dan back, right? So we got Sergeant Fury in his Howling Command. It's issue number 10. We've got...
Isn't it issue 9?
Is it? I thought it was 10.
As you can see, we're incredibly well
recorded. Oh, it is 9. It is 9.
10's what we're starting next week with.
Yeah, it is. I'm out of the loop. Been a long day. Number 9 is the one we're covering today. Daredevil, this is my podcast. What the fuck's going on? Daredevil number 4 will be after
like
that.
Like I said, Candy Spider-Man Man's 16. Fucking target.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead. Tales to Astonish issue number 59. And then
I will say, if it wasn't freezing rain, I was going to go buy a muffin just to run the gag up that much more.
And then we got Journey in the Mystery issue 108 to end this off, which will have
an A
and
a little
B-store.
Muffin.
So, let us move this podcast as fuck. Let us move on and start with Sergeant Fury and his Howling Commandos issue number 9, which, of course, is a Stanley and Dick Ayers is joining art for this issue. I think this is the first issue he's done so far.
I think Dick was on the last one.
He might have been on the last one. I didn't even realize when we were talking about it. And Sam Rosen is on letters. This is a June 1964 release. A whole 22-page story, of course. And off I go to take this one. Oh, story title? Mission? Capture Adolf Hitler.
I've heard of him.
Yeah, the last one was art by Dick Ayers as well.
Okay, it was the last issue was his first one then. That's good. Just gotta actually, I may have had the issue 10 summary pulled up, so here we go.
Oh.
From the Marvel database, number 9. Sergeant Fury and Pamela Hawley leave a USO dance. Her campaign to turn him into a gentleman seems to be working. They meet Percy Pinkerton, of course, the newest Towler.
Is he a Pinkerton detective?
I don't know. I'm guessing that's a reference to something.
just wondering.
Then the
I
other
got
Howling...
it. It's not better.
Come on, it was funny.
Then the other Howling Commandos drive by in a Jeep and accidentally splash mud on Fury. I can't believe it's leaving this stuff in the summary. While Fury explodes, Pinkerton behaves like a real gentleman and makes Fury jealous. Before he can change, Fury learns...
I suspect the reviewer thinks the Pinkerton-Pamela thing is going somewhere in future issues. Which
probably,
it may or may
yeah.
not be. I haven't read any future issues of this title.
It's set up that it could, but I don't know yet either. Because it's not continued in issue 10 at all.
Because if this does come back, then it is important to be in the recap.
Yeah. Fury learns that Captain Sawyer wants to see him. Still muddy, Fury meets General Durstein and gets the Howler's new mission. Kidnap Adolf Hitler. Kidnapping certainly a weird choice for that, but the squad into a field near Berlin. Been a long day. And meets a member of the German underground. He takes them to a rally where Hitler is given a speech. Walking into the hall, Fury recognizes Baron Strucker, last seen in issue 5, of course, who in turn recognizes him. Pinkerton disarms Strucker with his umbrella, and a melee breaks out. Izzy and Fury make it outside and want rendezvous with the underground agent. Strucker's Gestapo captures the others and prepares to execute them at dawn, meanwhile launching a manhunt to find Izzy and Fury. Izzy, Fury, and the agent infiltrate Gestapo HQ. They take Strucker and an aide prisoner. Threatened with death, Strucker takes Fury to Hitler's office and convinces Hitler to attend the execution. Disguised as a soldier, Fury drives Hitler to the prison. The other commanders stage an escape attempt, but the guards stop them with a water cannon. Yep, with a water cannon, you heard that right. Izzy and the agent...
It's a blast.
Fuck.
I know, I was just dripping with humor.
Izzy and the agent replace two of the guards leading the commandos into the yard. Hitler arrives, the firing squad takes aim, Izzy and the agent attack the firing squad. Fury opens fire and the commandos cut loose. They grab Hitler and pile into his car. Strucker orders the guards to follow, but they can't shoot at the car for fear of hitting Hitler. The command car reaches the pickup point, with the guards close behind. The plane lands between the guards and the commandos, shielding them long enough to climb aboard. The agent stays behind and dies in a hail of gunfire. The Howlers realize, well, it's implied that he dies, because it's pretty obvious he would. The Howlers realize that they never learned his name. Back in England, the commandos drive Hitler to Captain Sawyer. Hitler pulls off his nose and mustache to reveal a double. Durstein arrives and congratulates the squad for getting proof that Hitler uses doubles, a fact that will make good propaganda.
So I have some good stuff about this issue and some stuff I really have issues with in this
issue. I'm guessing you really have issue with the end?
That's actually going under the good stuff.
Fair enough.
The fact that it ended?
No, the fact that they basically got themselves out of the corner that every World War II comic has painted themselves into at some point, where you have extraordinary individuals going after Hitler, but we all know that Hitler wasn't actually captured or killed during World War II, so they have to come up with some reason for Hitler to get away, and this works so much better than numerous times in the Golden Age, where, you know, they just break right into Hitler's office, hold him at gunpoint, and then decide, fuck it, we'll just leave him here.
Yeah.
And especially because we do know, like, historically, Hitler did actually use doubles, so...
Yep, so did Montgomery, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, but it works historically, and it does give them an out where they can have a satisfying conclusion to the story, where they actually capture someone and get them back to headquarters without having to, you know... have Hitler escape, or have them just let him go, or punch him and leave.
I was very intrigued to see in the page count how they were going to get out of it, and that was a good way to do it.
Well, it is a well-known fact that a number of historical figures during the Second World War did use doubles. Churchill did. Field Marshal Montgomery did.
It makes sense.
Roosevelt didn't, but I guess he just wouldn't sit for something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
Roosevelt's a bit of a special case, too.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about a guy who got shot and then still gave a 2-hour speech about how much of a pussy the guy who shot him was because he couldn't finish the job properly.
No, that was me. Not Roosevelt, that was me.
Yeah, sorry I didn't do a better job, Dan.
Yeah, you missed. Oh, well. Anyway.
No, the negatives I was going to complain about, well, one of them is, I think, a bit of a issue they ran into with the conflicting ideas of what they were going to do with the Howlers, namely Boat wanting to be a representation of all the different elements of the American forces in World War II, and also constantly wanting them to go undercover in Germany, where Gabe just walks around in German clothes and no one notices the distinctly not Aryan person walking through Berlin or right into Hitler's meeting.
That was fucked. I was questioning that when I was reading it.
I think the only problem, I've never been a particularly big fan of Fury and the Howling Commandos, simply because it really didn't strike me as a war comic. It was just,
it's a superhero comic with war trappings.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not really a war comic per se. I mean, it's not terrible. But, you know, it's not bad. But it was just not.
It's the definition of fine. I enjoy all these issues. I have fun reading them. And then I don't think about them again ever.
Yeah. I figure it's okay. It's a good solid two.
It's one of the most. It's still one of the most fun titles to read.
Oh, I always enjoy reading it, but like,
it's probably in like third place or second, even sometimes. But
I always enjoy these. But
you like
they
Captain America?
So
we don't care what you think.
You don't like Spider-Man? We don't care what you think.
Actually, you should. Well,
you're in the You're in the way too focal minority, pal.
You just wait. Your day's coming by.
And you see, you say I like Captain America. Very soon, you're going to be getting to watch me shit on Captain America a lot, because early Captain America is bad.
Part of me as hopes I like it, just so we have different opinions.
Bad.
You won't.
I probably
at least
won't.
Until they go back to starting to tell World War II stories. In other words, reprinting Captain America 1 with new art. You won't like it. I'm not joking. Literally, like, 3 or 4 issues of the Captain America stories are just issue 1 of Captain America comics redrawn and
redrawn.
New dialogue,
incredible.
But it's the same stories.
Incredible. Alrighty.
Well, let's move on to Daredevil.
We
Everybody's
need to give our ratings on this
week.
Before we move
on.
Oh,
that's right. I gave it.
This was a 3-star story.
I apparently really enjoyed this one and gave it 4. So.
2. And I'm being generous.
I did have a lot of fun reading that one, besides the whole why is there a black man able to just easily walk into the meat and part and stuff. And it was just surprisingly fun.
Oh, right, he just came back from a cross burning and he's covered in soot.
For my next impression, Jesse Owens.
Jesse Owens.
That, I think, is one of the most underrated jokes in that movie.
Oh my god, it was so
no
good.
One picks up that he's about to run really fast while surrounded by racists.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
You have no idea what we're talking about, do you?
No,
Ryan?
Not at all.
Blazing Saddles.
Mel Brooks.
Well, let's move on to Daredevil issue number 4.
Wow.
Which is titled Kilgrave, the Unbelievable Purple Man. Of course, story by Stan Lee. And Joe Orlando is back on art. He's been here since issue number 2 now. Vincent Coletta on inks again, as started last issue, I believe. Jack Kirby and Vincent Coletta on the cover. And Sam Rosen is on letters here. August 1964 release. 22-page story yet again. And I will also be covering this one. A strange man by the name of Kilgrave, with purple skin, walks into a bank and demands a large sum of money. And surprisingly, the bank clerk offers it with a question. After
Here,
Kilgrave,
give me a large sum of money.
Just color yourself purple, Dan. You'd be perfect. Not as sexy as David Tennant, though. But you know, whatever.
Ow! Wow.
What, as if you disagree with that statement,
I'm David sorry, Tennant. I don't find him attractive.
Okay, whatever. after Kilgrave leaves, the teller believes he has been robbed.
Really?
Quickly arrested
what
by
Keith, shock.
The purple man, in quotes, is brought before a judge, where he refuses to be represented by a lawyer. The judge assigns him one anyway, Matt Murdock. Coincidentally, Matt Murdock.
This moment marks another point where Stan Lee doesn't understand something. In this case, the American legal system, where you have the right to defend yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this, that's a, yeah, the legal system part is a little bit of an oversight, but you know, whatever. When Murdock visits Kilgrave in his jail cell, Kilgrave tells Murdock that he doesn't need a lawyer. He demonstrates by asking the guard to let him go, then asking Karen Page to accompany him. They both comply, although Matt isn't affected. He waits until everybody else snaps into Kilgrave's control, then follows him in his guise of Daredevil. Kilgrave orders bystanders to attack Daredevil, force them to retreat. They don't include the funny bit in the...
Yeah, he gets his hood ripped off here.
Yeah, so this Start is the part...
A little fanny pack he added to his costume to carry his clothes.
His little hood that debuted in the last issue that he was using to carry his civilian clothes, it gets ripped off here as Daredevil holds onto a tree. And
I believe
then,
it lasted a total of 12 pages between two issues.
Daredevil is kind of thankful that it got ripped off. He's like, yeah, that was kind of dumb. Yeah,
Like that was Stan taking a direct shot at Joe Orlando.
Probably.
Because Orlando probably just started drawing that hood on there to give him a place to carry his clothes. And Stan told him it was shit after that issue came in. And so
probably
then Joe had to get rid of it. And when Stan got the chance to write this one, he had to take a direct shot at how stupid it was. We'll see the same thing repeated in the future with Iron Man's nose, only over a much longer period of time.
Kilgrave amasses a small army of strong men from a local gym and takes over the Ritz Plaza Hotel. Meanwhile, Daredevil prepares his miniature tape recorder and other gadgets built into his billy club. Another stupid bit of this issue is him building shit into his billy club and then continuing to use it like normal and all this shit as if it wouldn't affect the equipment inside. Later, Daredevil chases Kilgrave up to the hotel roof, where the Purple Man orders Karen to stand on the ledge of the building and forces Daredevil to comply by holding him at gunpoint. Kilgrave explains how he got his uncanny powers. While spying on a lab for a communist country, he was accidentally doused with a chemical. A mysterious chemical. When he was caught by the plant guards, he found that he was able to bend their will, and soon decided it would be best to become a criminal, as you do. Daredevil jumps off the side of the building with Karen and swings her to safety, then returns to fight Kilgrave. He subdues the villain with the special cape that he built into his billy club to re- Oh.
Yeah, he built a whole blanket into the billy club that he throws over Kilgrave's head.
He sure did. And
holy shit.
A special cape that he built into his billy club to retard his abilities. He then turns the Purple Man over to the police with a tape of Kilgrave's confessions. After removing his costume, he returns to the Nelson and Murdock law offices, where he finds that Karen is okay. However, they both keep their feelings for each other to themselves, because, you know, of course they do.
Because, like, nobody really cares.
Okay, that's the end of that. And it sounds worse than it is, but it's also, okay. Like, not great. But it's not that bad as it sounds.
Yeah, it's a 3-star story. I expected more from the first appearance of the Purple Man, to be honest.
I didn't. But
I hadn't caught on how bad early Daredevil was yet.
I just know that Purple Man doesn't have the best... I already knew that Purple Man didn't have the best reputation for a while. But I just love the Purple Man and the concept, so... I mean,
yeah, at least he's not green, okay?
Exactly. But purple's the secondary evil color, if you haven't picked up.
So it would seem, yeah.
Mysterio,
Doctor Doom.
There's one or two others I can't remember that aren't as important. Oh, Beetle. That's one of them.
I was going to say Beetle, and I didn't really want to think about Beetle that much.
Come on. Give your scores on this one, guys.
We already did. We better not say... I gave you three as well. We better not say that name one more time, or we might have to read another issue with the character in it. But anyway.
Or Candyman?
Oh, don't worry. He'll show up.
Candyman. Candyman.
Johnny Storm for the next little while, I think.
The white man's playing a dangerous game there. No. But anyway. Let's move on to Amazing Spider-Man number 16.
Oh, can we? Yay.
We sure can, Dan. I know you've been waiting all day.
Don't
you know
please
what?
Make this short.
I know you've been waiting 2 weeks for this. Amazing Spider-Man number 16. Titled...
Wait, Bill.
Oh,
Bill.
Wait. It's this Amazing Spider-Man you stuck me with.
Yeah, I gave you great entries this time, Bill.
Yeah, try to equate it to Ryan's attention span, which is short to non-existent. You know,
that's
just get through it.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about. Hey, what's that over there? I don't know. Anyway.
A rock.
This story is titled Duel with Daredevil. Of course, this is a Stan Lee and Steve Ditko project. The only other people on this are the colorist Stan Goldberg, and Sam Rosen is on letters. June 1964 release, 22-page story, and I'm going to give Bill one of their favorite Amazing Spider-Man issues.
You know what? Fuck the circus of crime. They don't deserve me doing my own synopsis for this.
Oh. Are you going to the database?
I am.
A podcast first for Bill.
All three of us.
That tells you how much Bill likes this story.
To be fair, I didn't hate it as much as I make out that I hated it. But anyway. Peter is given a hard time for not calling Mary Jane Watson and setting up a blind date with her. In order to get some peace and quiet, Pete heads out as Spider-Man. When swinging around, he notices a gang of criminals escaping with bags of money who decide to attack a nearby bystander who might place them at the crime scene. That witness is none other than Matt Murdock, a.k.a. Daredevil, but Spider-Man sees a poor blind man in need of help and rounds up the criminals. Foggy Nelson, Murdock's partner, and Karen Page, his secretary, are waiting on Matt in the office and invite him to go to the circus, despite his blindness, to have a good time. I'm glad the person who wrote this wiki took a shot at inviting a blind man to the circus, because if they didn't, I was going to. At the circus, the ringmaster and his crew prepare the final touches, falsely claiming that Spider-Man himself will show up for charity to lure more people into their trap. The show begins, and Spider-Man, feeling obligated because it's charity, appears, much to the crowd's delight, and gives off an acrobatic show like no other. The ringmaster uses his hat to hypnotize not only the audience, but also Spider-Man, so he can rob them. Matt Murdock, not affected by the hypnosis, senses the disturbance and becomes Daredevil to take on the crooks. The ringmaster uses his hat to get Spider-Man to fight and protect him as he takes on Daredevil himself. After a brief fight, Daredevil grabs the hat with his cane and removes the spell on Spider-Man, then returns to the crowd as Matt Murdock. Spider-Man cleans up the rest of the carnival of crooks by riding the human bullet and tying up the crooks. After the hypnosis is removed from the crowd, Matt naturally offers his services as a defense attorney to the now arrested ringmaster. This was actually a pretty decent issue of Daredevil. And I'm not even just being a dick when I say that. Like, reading this story, once you get past the bit with the blind date for Mary Jane... This is 90% of Daredevil's story. It's focused on
Matt. It really is.
For the whole time. They do way more with Matt's personal drama. And Spider-Man just kind of shows up in the fights. And then there's like four pages of him rounding up the circus of crime once Matt goes back to the audience. And then it cuts back to Matt to try to, you know, solicit work from the ringmaster.
This is Stan trying to get his new boy Daredevil over.
Wow.
I mean, that being said, it was a 3-star story.
Same. Actually, that synopsis made it sound pretty good, too. I mean, it wasn't a bad story.
It's a weak
Spider-Man story, but it was.
Yeah, it's a weak Spider-Man issue and a fairly strong Daredevil issue, so it averages out at 3.
Thankfully, Steve Ditko was consistently the best at fight scenes so far, so that did also help it a little bit, but...
Yeah, Spider-Man fight issues are a lot more readable than other heroes' fight issues at this point in the order.
Yeah, Steve Ditko rules. That about sums it up for me.
Yeah. Wow. I didn't have a lot to say about this story other than just liking it more than I expected for a crossover with Daredevil.
It's a bottom 5 Spider-Man story so far, for sure.
Yeah, but there's only been, like, one bad Spider-Man story so far.
I'd argue 2, but yes.
Yeah, okay.
I'd go as high as 3, actually.
Okay, well, fair enough. I'll agree
with
that.
If we want to count the Tinkerer and in both parts of the Salute to Teenagers.
Of course I count the Tinkerer. That's the one of the ones I was saying. But anyways, let's move on.
Yeah, okay.
This is the highlight of the week. Tales to Astonish, issue number 59, titled Enter the Hulk. This is by, of course, written by Stan Lee. Heyo. Art by Dick Ayers, which Dick Ayers has been a highlight recently. Paul Reinman on inks, Jack Kirby and Sol Brodsky on cover. Artie Simic on letters, June 1964 release. This is an 18-page story. By the way, the first issue in a while of Tales to Astonish where we're only getting one story. There's no backup story for this one.
Well, there is, but it's not really a story. It's just an explanation of the gimmicks that Hank and Jan
have. They use. Yeah, well, yeah.
And it's not Fair even enough. Presented as, like, an in-universe explanation of them. Like, they'll give some of those later with X-Men and so. This is just, like, a straight, dry, they have these items, they work like this.
Yeah, so it's pretty much a backup feature, not really a backup story. And yeah, this one is also for Bill to cover.
By which you mean the Marvel Wiki, because I've set a precedent now. I'm sticking with it for this one.
We've broken Bill this episode.
And shockingly, this one's longer than the Spider-Man summary.
Well, like you said, Spider-Man was a fight issue for half of it.
Well, yeah, this actually makes sense that it's got more to it. Anyway, while in training, the Avengers hear news of the Hulk's recent battle against Spider-Man. Elsewhere in the city, David Cannon, a.k.a. the Human Top, reads
Everybody's
about
favorite.
Giant Man's recent battle against the Colossus and recounts his last defeat at the hands of Giant Man. Since then, he has been practicing a new ability, the ability to generate a stream of powerful air pressure in a blast, strong enough to punch through a brick wall. He plots a way to get revenge on his foe. Later, after the training session with the Avengers is adjourned, Giant Man and Wasp take to the streets. After roughing up some catcallers who are whistling at the Wasp, Giant Man is spotted by Cannon, who follows them as the Top, spinning too fast to be seen. The Top overhears the two heroes planning to go to New Mexico to search for the Hulk. Giant Man and Wasp arrive at the New Mexico missile testing base and ask General Ross for assistance in capturing the Hulk. Ross attempts to assign Bruce Banner to help the two heroes, but Banner declines and leaves in a foul mood. While driving in the desert, Banner gets excited enough to trigger his transformation into the Hulk. The Hulk, deciding to go after Giant Man, trashes Banner's Jeep and jumps into the sky. Landing in a nearby town, the Hulk goes on a rampage and is spotted by the Top in his civilian guise, who begins planning how to use the Hulk to destroy Giant Man. Meanwhile, in the desert, Betty Ross, Giant Man, and the Wasp find the wreckage of Banner's Jeep, and they believe that he was attacked by the Hulk, none of them knowing that Hulk and Banner are the same. Giant Man vows to stop the Hulk and get Bruce back. Elsewhere in the desert, the Top tries to stop the Hulk long enough to offer a partnership, but misses his chance when the Hulk bounces away too soon. Giant Man spots the Hulk and shrinks down to ant size to get ahead of him via a miniature rocket he built. Landing in a nearby town, Giant Man resumes his giant size and uses a billboard as a megaphone to warn the townspeople of the Hulk's pending arrival. Outside the city, the Top confronts the Hulk and informs him that Giant Man is waiting for him in town. The Hulk bounds off the battle the hero, while the Top initiates the second part of his plan. He locates General Ross and his military convoy and informs them that the Hulk is in a nearby deserted town. He convinces them to use a miniature nuclear weapon, hoping that it will also destroy Giant Man. While Giant Man and the Hulk battle in the abandoned town, the Wasp learns of the General's plan to fire the missile, but is too late to stop it. Failing to disarm the missile, she contacts Giant Man via their cybernetic link, and Giant Man convinces the Hulk to stop the missile. The Hulk grabs the missile in midair, foiling the Top's plan. The Top, fearing that the missile could go off anyhow, makes a run for it, but soon becomes its victim when the Hulk unknowingly throws it in the Top's direction. The explosion causes the Hulk to revert back into Bruce Banner, who reunites with Betty Ross. Returning to New York, Giant Man jokingly states that he has nothing to report while attending the next Avengers meeting. That's the end.
Oh, perfect. That was falsely.
Yeah. This is good by the standards of Giant Man, which means it's just really boring.
Dan, you're muted.
Sorry. Yeah.
No. Oh, no, it was better.
Oh, yeah. Go Liverpool. Fuck both of you.
Wait, you're unmuted now.
Yeah.
Go back.
Yeah. No, it wasn't that bad a story.
No, honestly, the synopsis makes
Giant
it.
Man stories.
The synopsis makes it better than the reading.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to say it's better than most Giant Man stories.
It is.
I still only gave it 2 stars, but
I gave it 3 because I was impressed that it was an 18-page Giant Man that I didn't hate getting through.
I'm going to be a complete dick and say I gave it 3.
I didn't. Okay. I didn't really like this one still, but I didn't hate it. So 2 stars.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically just a giant advertisement for the fact that they're putting Hulk in the book next month.
Yeah.
Because this was our last solo Giant Man Tales to Astonish.
Thank fuck.
Not really. We're not going to get to read any of those Hulk stories for ages.
That's
because
not a bad
it
thing.
Kicks off That's... with like a 20-part story.
Okay. Sure.
It runs long enough that Giant Man will be canceled as a title before we go back and read the Hulk halves.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. oh, fuck. Well, let's move on to our main event of the week. And we'll go into Journey into Mystery, issue number 108. Starting off with the A story here, which is titled At the Mercy of Loki, Prince of Evil. Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. Good to see Jack Kirby this week. Hello, buddy. inks by Chick Stone. Jack Kirby and George Russo is on the cover. At least that's what this says. I don't know if that's actually true. Because it could be Chick Stone. Might be. I don't know. It might actually be Russo's, though. Artie Simic on letters. And July 1964 release. 18-page story for the A story. And this one's for Dan.
Yeah. You know, this cover would be actually halfway decent if it wasn't for all the fucking word bubbles.
Yeah, but it's 1964.
Yeah.
That's what they do.
That's right. So here's our synopsis.
Back when Dan was middle-aged.
And I'll unmute myself again. Okay, our story begins with Thor rescuing a child from being run over by a speeding truck. That's mighty nice of him. On his patrol of the city, Thor receives the telepathic summons of Doctor Strange for his aid. Arriving at Strange's Sanctum Sanctorium, he finds Doctor Strange passed out on the ground. Reviving him, Thor learns that Strange was severely weakened after stopping Baron Mordo from casting a spell on the city. Strange loses consciousness, prompting Thor to call for an ambulance and resume his mortal guise of Dr. Blake. At the hospital, Blake performs surgery on Strange. At that moment, Odin attempts to contact Thor telepathically to ask him to aid his fellow Asgardians in battle. Blake chooses to ignore Odin's summons as he is in the middle of a surgery. This prompts Odin's wrath, causing an electrical storm on Earth that knocks out the power to the hospital. Blake is determined to continue the operation, and in Asgard, Odin leads his warriors into battle without Thor's aid. God, sounds like some kind of new drink. With Odin gone, Loki transforms himself into a bee and flies past Heimdall and crosses a Bifrost bridge to Earth. Later, after Doctor Strange's surgery, Blake checks up on his patient, who offers to repay Blake for saving his life. Blake returns to his office, where Jane Foster shows him to an old man with a lame leg. The old man trips while he's standing up to greet Blake, so that he kneels over and the two drop their canes. Getting back up and grabbing one of the canes and handing the other to Blake, the old man suddenly states that he is well, tossing the cane in his hand out a nearby window. The old man transforms suddenly into Loki. Bum, bum, bum. Who uses a magic mist to put Jane Foster to sleep. Blake attempts to change into Thor, but soon realizes that during the confusion, Loki had switched canes, and the one that would change him into Thor was tossed out the window.
This one's Luke Gallows.
Yeah. Loki grabs the unconscious Jane Foster and leaps out the window, taking her hostage.
You're way too proud of that joke.
You were really weird, you know that?
I fought myself one.
Yeah, okay. This is actually a long synopsis, so. Blake, unable to find his cane, attempts to contact Odin, who doesn't answer his summons. He then enlists the aid of Doctor Strange, who uses his ectoplasmic form and mystic amulet to find the cane. Blake locates it near the harbor, where a bunch of hobos are using it for a fishing rod. Okay, Doctor Strange's ghost form scares the hobos.
The hobos. Oh, yeah, God, that was offensive.
Scares the hobos into giving Blake back his cane. With Strange gone, Blake turns into Thor and begins his search for Loki. Meanwhile, Odin returns from battle and, feeling he was too harsh on his son, attempts to contact him again. Thor snaps at Odin for not responding to his request for aid and tells Odin to piss off. Well, he says leave him be. Piss off, same thing. So, during his search for Jane Foster, Thor runs into his fellow Avengers, Iron Man, Giant Man, and the Wisp. Or sorry, the Wasp, who offer their aid. Thor turns them down, stating his quest is a private matter. He uses his hammer to locate Loki, who is hiding out in the Adirondack Mountains. Okay. Before confronting Loki, Thor contacts Doctor Strange mentally and asks him to use his magic to help save Jane from Loki. Confronting the God of Mischief, Thor learns that Loki has banished Foster to Limbo and threatens to destroy her should Thor attack. But Thor battles Loki until his foe knocks him into a pit that he set as a trap. Then Loki casts a spell that will kill Jane Foster and sends it into the Limbo Void. However, his spell is blocked due to a counterspell conjured by Doctor Strange. Thor gets out of the pit and fights Loki into submission, forcing him to return Jane from Limbo. Just before Loki can attack again, a soldier from Asgard sent by Odin arrives and takes Loki back to Asgard. Odin contacts Thor and the two make peace. Thor flies back to the city with Jane, leaving Odin to wonder why his son still loves a mere mortal. Yeah.
It was certainly a story that had Thor in it.
And Thor responds.
This is like every other Thor story they've told.
Yeah.
Nothing of consequence happened in it.
No. If Thor was in, you know, unable to really best Loki most of the time, how was his mere soldier from Asgard going to handle him?
I just didn't like this one. Especially after the last few, this one was just lame. Loki has not been as good as you'd expect he would have been for Thor.
Well, here's the thing. None of Loki's stories are bad. The problem is Stan doesn't have any new ideas of what to do with Loki, so it's just the same story.
Over and over.
Every time he doesn't have anything for Thor, he just does the same thing with Loki.
So, I gave this one a 2. I wasn't into it.
This was a 2 for me, too.
I'm shocked. Yeah. I thought you would have given it a 3.
But
that's telling.
Yeah, nothing good happened in here. Like, it's just the same Thor story.
It's like, not very exciting.
The Kane gimmick would have been nice if Thor, like, it didn't make Thor look like a bumbling idiot. Well, Donald Blake, I guess, but still.
Same person. They've already started merging their personalities.
True. Yeah. What were you going to say, though, Bill?
I was going to say, like, if this was the, like, second or third Loki story, it would have been a 3.
Mm, yeah.
But it's been done so many times that I can't keep giving the same story a 3 because...
It's just tedious.
Yeah, repetition reduces the value of it.
Yeah, well, Loki's proving to be nothing more than a pain in the butt. He's not really a villain. He's more of a useful idiot.
Inconvenience.
The majority of their villains aren't really that villainous because the comic code doesn't let them do anything super villainous at this point. Like,
True.
And that, I think that hurts Loki more than other villains. Because Loki's a god, if Loki was going to actually do, like, villainous Loki stuff, it would involve genociding, like, an entire civilization or something.
It arguably hurts Loki the most at this point. The only other contenders would be, like, a Magneto or a Doom, but Doom's actually been handled very well, so it doesn't really affect Doom as much as it should.
Same with Magneto. Magneto's getting hurt by repetition. But his schemes are suitably villainous.
Yeah.
It's just like Loki's never going to want to just rob a bank or something.
No.
Yeah. So, yeah. Loki's really getting hurt by the comics code. I'm excited for when the comics code will be gone so we can get some more, detailed villainy.
You'll start getting the good villainy long before the comic code goes away, because that persisted into the 90s.
Yeah, true. That's true.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we should move on to the B story, which is titled Trapped by the Trolls. And this one has Jack Kirby art still, I guess, and Vincent Coletta is on inks. Artie Simic's on letters. This is a 5-page story, and Dan can take this one as well.
Yay! Interestingly enough, the summary here starts with a quote from Thor. "Do not despair, man of Asgard. While life remains, hope can truly never perish." Okay. Tales from Asgard, Trapped by the Trolls. Seeking cover from a raging storm, Thor asks King Sindri of the dwarves to provide him with shelter. I'm having the same problem Ryan had all of a sudden. The dwarves, required to provide another slave to the trolls as payment to avoid their kingdom being attacked, drop Thor down into the pit of the trolls. That's very sweet of them. He seems to be falling into a lot of pits. I don't know. They just
like this title did with this issue.
Well, it's just these Thor stories seem to have pitfalls everywhere. There, he is made their prisoner and shackled to a wall. However, Thor frees himself with the aid of his hammer and sets the slaves free and single-handedly defeats all the trolls, freeing everyone. Thor leads them to the surface and uses his hammer to seal the entrance to the troll caves. Then beats the crap out of the dwarves for betraying him.
Yeah, that's literally it.
Story lost a lot in the synopsis.
Okay.
Because in the actual issue, it's just some traveler that's got a cape and like a hood on. And okay. You don't realize it's Thor until the point when he breaks out.
Oh, okay.
And it makes the story work better because you're like three pages in of just this interesting story of the dwarves betraying someone, selling them to the trolls. And then it's revealed as Thor just to give him a wrap-up and, I guess, somewhat tie it into Marvel continuity.
Well, you think they could have mentioned that in the synopsis instead of calling him Thor. Just say this, you know, hooded stranger.
Well, yeah. If you were paying attention to the title, you knew it was going to be Thor anyway because they teased it in the last issue. So I knew it was Thor the whole time. But
yeah, I mean, well, I knew it was
Thor,
too.
Who else is it
going to
be?
Yeah, exactly. Who else is it going to be? But the crafting of the story was better than that.
Either Thor or Dwayne Johnson, right? It's one of the two. You just know, right? Who else shows up in these things?
But yeah, Dwayne Johnson is everywhere.
That is true. Although, you know, I don't know if you'd send a rock to mine rocks. It kind of seems vaguely cannibalistic.
Well, you know, if you were trolling him.
Everybody knows that paper beats rock.
Wow, that was just really anticlimactic.
Great way to end the podcast.
Yeah, I like the first. I like the first story better.
I like this one better than the first story.
Me too. Really? I
at least
gave
did
this
something
one a three.
Different with this one. Yeah, same
okay,
here.
True, true.
I mean, and the standards for a 5-page story are going to be low. You can't
that's
do.
Fair. Yeah.
You can't do a lot with 5 pages, so I don't expect a lot from them.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, it wasn't horrible, but.
They're in a bit of a lull with Tales of Asgard right now. They don't really know where they're going with it. Kind of floundering around.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. That was an exciting episode.
Wasn't it? That was episode 36 of Route 616. We will tease next week's entries when we come back. We have a bonus episode coming at some point, but we don't have the time nailed down yet, so we'll see on that.
Yeah.
And we are going to start next week off with Sergeant Fury and his Howling Commandos, issue number 10, which is the issue I almost read at the start of this one. We have that one is the team going to Okinawa. Then we go into Tales of Suspense, issue number 57, Dan's favorite title. The A story, we'll see the debut of Hawkeye. Then we have a B story, which is called The Watcher's Power. Do with that what you will, because I'm not telling you anything else about it. Tales of Suspense, issue number 58, A story, which sees Iron Man and Captain America face off. Why? Find out next week. B story.
Spoiler, it's because they're putting Captain America in the back half of Iron Man's book.
Well, yes, but there is also another in-story reason.
You remember how, like, 2 issues back, they were talking about how Iron Man was going to be 19 pages forever?
Yeah.
Yeah, that lasted.
The B story of issue 58 is titled The Watcher Must Die, and, well, kinda. Because the story is.
So, this is an early tie in for Original Sin?
Because the story sure dies after this one.
Thankfully.
And then, to end us off, since we are using the database more anyway, I'm gonna end us off next week with the Amazing Spider-Man annual, the first annual.
Yeah, so we shouldn't go any further. Note. That's a 41-page story.
Yeah, we're not going any further. Hey. We're just sending that off with that for a high note.
And don't worry, Dan, it's not as long as it seems because they do a lot of splash pages in that one.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah, I looked at the
it's
summary,
realistically
too,
only
I made
about
the
a 30-page story, and it's mostly a fight.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I looked at the summary before I made that decision too. So
yeah, it is a big, big deal for that issue though, because it's the debut of the Sinister Six.
Yes, it is the debut of the Sinister Six, and that's why I wanted to end on that high note. So join us next week.
Yeah.
And if you are watching this on YouTube, please would like to subscribe, comment, and share if you'd like to. We're also available on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. And if you're on Spotify, there's that poll to click into and tell us why the Daredevil issue was your favorite and why you love the Purple Man.
Join us next week when you'll hear Ryan and Bill both say, I give it a 3.
Probably.
Oh, it changes up a bunch in the next one. Sinister Six didn't get a 3, and neither did those Watcher stories. They don't all go in the same direction.
Right.
They really don't. Anyway, guys, we'll see you on the next episode, and peace out.
Have a good one.